morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Welcome to Friday, everybody. Fly Jams Friday coming up in a little bit and all the other regular features. But first, I would like to welcome to the show my guest. He is the author of a book called Laughing at the Sun, the story of a man who changed his spots. And it is essentially a road trip. It's a book about a road trip, but a road trip that was very important to the author. A road trip about two guys who are driving across country and come to some epiphanies along the way, if you will. The author is a gentleman named Michael Nejman, and that's spelled N-E-J-M-A-N, Michael Nejman. And we want to talk to him about his experience on the road and all other kind of cool things. Michael, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Nick, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Before we get into the book, which I found very enjoyable, I want to ask you about your background now. You know, in the book, you talk about your time, you know, coordinating special events and really cool stuff through Harper College.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me a little bit about that. You're originally from Chicago, the Chicago area.
Yeah, I was born in Bucktown, and when I was 10, we moved out to the suburbs. And actually, you and I met a long time ago through our mutual friend, Dan Geyer. I think you were on the Roy Leonard Show at the time, and I was promoting the World's Worst Film Festival at Harper College. And getting a lot of national attention, actually, for a whole array of really bad films. We were doing all the classics, Plan 9 from Outer Space, and They Saved Hitler's Brain, and that infamous midget musical western, Terror of Tiny Town.
Absolutely.
And,
no,
I
know that you and I had met before.
Sure.
And I knew that it had to have something to do with Harper College. I appeared at Harper College a few times and spoke most of the time with Dan.
Right.
And then when I and this is the thing, and I know we've met more than once because when I started to read the book, when I started to look at the book, and then I looked at your picture on the back, I was like, oh yeah, this is the guy that looks like Swayze.
Well, yeah, I was on the Jenny Jones Show.
Yeah, that's right.
For that very thing, yes.
So talk about how you got working at Harper College and some of the things that you did besides the Worst Film Festival, which is really cool. But talk about your connection to Harper.
Yeah, I worked there for some 31 years doing all the cultural arts programming, and I had a phenomenal run. I met Rick Hewitt over at Zany's Comedy Club early in my career, and learned that it was better to work with rather than compete against. And so thanks to him in our co-productions, we brought Jay Leno, Jerry Seinfeld, Jon Stewart, Bill Maher to the college, Richard Lewis. And then I started to branch out and do shows with like Buddy Guy and Muddy Waters and Wilco and Amy Mann, Joan Jett, Psychedelic Furs, Violent Femmes. But what I think is really interesting, though, is actually I went to Harper as a student back in the late 70s, and when I was on their concerts, I was their concerts chair for their programming board. The first show that I ever booked actually was Journey before they broke, and they played our student center.
Is that right?
$2.50 to get in.
Wow!
And they drew so much power that the lights in our parking lot were dimming. You know, it was like that sort of, you know, that kind of caught me, and it was just the type of thing that I knew that I wanted to do for the rest of my career.
Yeah.
You know, was to do this kind of programming, and I loved it. I loved working with students, and Harper was just such a great place to do that.
Yeah, well, it's a great story. Now, through Zany's, is that how you met your friend Bob?
No.
Actually, oddly, and that's
it was a fluke. I was dating this woman who worked at an advertising agency, and she told me about this underground Halloween party, and she said, "Do you want to go?" And I was open minded. I said, "Sure." And she gives me this directive, though. She says, you know, you got to dress provocatively. And I remember going to my closet and looking, and I didn't see anything really provocative. So I improvised. I came up with this character, Satan the Clown. You know, right. I had this demonic face paint, fingerless leather gloves. I looked more menacing than provocative. And she came as a sexy French maid. So we did blend in quite nicely because we were this nice, you know, collaboration of sexy and creepy. So we fit in with the group. Mm-hmm. And so we go to this event, and it was called Circus of the Bizarre. It was Halloween weekend, 1982.
Right. You meant you do talk about this in the book. Yep.
Right, yeah. I dedicate a chapter because it was fascinating. This event was a combination of, well, it was an underground neo-vaudevillian performance art extravaganza that I would say was a combination of Rocky Horror Picture Show and Cirque du Soleil, if you can imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
And the very next day, though, I enjoyed the experience so much, and I wrote Bob Fisher, and I said, you know, I went to your Circus of the Bizarre Arts, and I found it the most decadent and disgusting display of humanity I've ever seen. I loved every minute of it. How can I get more involved? And he called me up, invited me to dinner, and then asked me to be his production manager for the next show he had coming up, which was an adult prom. We had both determined that neither of us had gone to a prom, so we thought it would be fun to throw a prom for adults. So that was the next event. Then I was his production manager for about 5 years.
Yeah, and that was the relationship you guys had. Now, during that time, and I want to get to, you know, I mean, all of this stuff has actually... is actually in the book.
Sure.
You know, and I do want to mention this, though. You open up the book very interestingly, sure. Michael. The opening scene that is pictured in the book is you grabbing your friend basically by the lapels and dangling him over a cliff.
Yes.
As you are about to kill him. And so,
right. Right. What I want to interject here, though, is really funny is that I had thought about writing this book for quite some time, and I figured I'd better kind of run it past Bob just to let him know that I was thinking about doing that since he was, you know, part of one of the subjects, you know. And I said, you know, I was really thinking of that trip that we took, that cross-country trip, and he said, oh, the one where you nearly killed me. And I had to stop for a moment because I completely blocked that out. It's like I could not remember the fact until he triggered that memory, and he said, yeah, don't remember, you know, I was really pressing all your buttons, and you almost threw me over a cliff, and then it all came back to me, and I thought, yes, I have to write this book.
Yeah, you have to write. That's it right there. And I love the fact that that's the first thing that pops out of his mouth, too. It's like, oh, yeah, let's write that. Yeah, that's that trip where you almost killed me.
Well, you know, as close to friends as we are, and we've been friends now for over 33 years, you know, friends, sometimes your best friends can have that real, like that sibling rivalry kind of connection to you, and they know all your buttons, they know how to press them, and Bob and I do that from time to time.
No, I think everybody can identify with that. Everybody has friends where, you know, and especially if a lot of this, the people involved are, I don't know, sort of like creative.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Especially if you're collaborating on something. I've worked with, you know, on plays and stuff with friends, and we've flipped tables and thrown chairs and screamed at each other. And so that's doable. But it's a great way. It's a grabber. Let me say, Michael, it's, you know, to open up the book with like you dangling a guy over a cliff. That's a pretty strong opener.
I mean, but one of the reasons I wanted to write from that first chapter was he comes out. The first thing he says is writing. I can't think of a more impotent act.
Right.
You know, nobody reads anymore, which I thought, you know, what a great way to start a book, I think, really. And that was what he was saying, basically, to me at that time. And, I was trying to get enough courage to take time to write the book, and he wasn't allowing me to do that.
I want to ask you, before we get into some of the stuff that happens in the book and some of the, you know, the epiphanies that happen to you and to your friend Bob in the book. And the book is called Laughing at the Sun, by the way. I have to ask you, you know, what was it like? I mean, because you guys, the way it's described, you guys could not be more different.
Sure.
How did you maintain a relationship with someone who, well, describe who Bob is, first of all. Sure. He's an artist, but he's a very interesting guy.
Well, People magazine dubbed him the Windy City Warhol, you know, because he painted these pop art portraits of celebrities as well as the decadent and the grotesque, you know. And he created this thing called Bizarte, which was bizarre art. And part of those events that I was just talking about was the fact that that was his way of getting people to come out to check out his art. Instead of doing boring gallery shows with wine and cheese and crackers, he was throwing these wild underground events and getting people to see his art. So he was just intriguing. He's probably the most colorful person I've ever met. And one of the first things he said to me was that his greatest fear in life was to be boring. And, you know, knowing Bob as long as I have, you know, I can think of a lot of adjectives for him, but boring is not one of them.
Yeah.
And so you can't help but want to hang out with the guy. You know, when we used to do the nightclub scene, you know, we go to places like Berlin or Medusa's or Crowbar or Neo or Lucky Number or Limelight, whatever. We never waited in lines. We always got VIP treatment with him. He was the Windy City Warhol, and we were treated as if we were part of that posse. And so that was always a lot of fun. And to answer your question, though, Nick, we may superficially look like there's just no way that we would really get along.
But if
you go deeper, you know, we both had this real love for cultural arts. You know, we just thrived on going, you know, we went to a lot of museums together and saw a lot of movies together. And then we also had this very dark sense of humor. And I think that that's always been a great connection between us. I used to do these gallery shows, this photography exhibit called To Die For, a celebration of cemeteries and the lighter side of death. And I collected images of cemeteries and grave sites across the the world, and had celebrity grave sites, you know, like Jimi Hendrix and Jim Morrison and Oscar Wilde and Frank Sinatra and so on and so forth. And it's just that kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek humor that we both shared. And if you look at his art, a lot of his early paintings, there is a dark sense of humor with most of his art, and something that I really appreciated. So when we get together, when we're not, you know, pressing each other's buttons, we laugh a lot. We really do. And he lives out in Oakland now, so I don't see him as often as I used to, but, you know, whenever we get together on the phone or he comes into town or I go and visit him, you know, it's like we just pick up where we left off, and I think that's a mark of a really great, you know, long-term relationship.
Well, it's interesting. It is interesting, and you could feel that when you're, you know, in the book, that you guys are really, really close. That comes through, you know, on every page. I just want to mention, for people who might not know his work, you've probably seen it if you've been to Zanies.
Right.
Because, like, all of his, like, the artwork that he did of the comedians and the stars that have passed through Zanies are plastered all over the walls at Zanies. So
yeah,
you know, like
Jay
that.
Leno, mm-hmm. Richard Lewis, Sam Kinison, Jerry Seinfeld. And that's a great example of his early work. And just to throw in now, you know, he moved out to California in the 90s, and then he got into photography, and now he's publishing a book called Vignettes that is a wonderful collection of his street photography, and he's just such a talented guy.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see the way he has progressed.
That's,
you know, throughout his career.
Okay, we're going to take a break, Michael. When we come back, we'll talk all about that infamous road trip that you went on, and it's all written down in Laughing at the Sun, and Michael Nayman is with us, and we'll come back and talk about the book right after this on 720 WEGN. Morning, everybody. Hi. It's Friday, man. Fly Jams Friday coming up a little bit later on. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. If you go to facebook.com/Nick D Show and like us, you will find the link to a book called Laughing at the Sun. The author is Michael Nayman, and it is about a road trip that Michael went on with his friend Bob, a cross-country road trip. And it was a pretty important road trip to Michael. A lot of stuff came about, and it was epiphanies and changes. And it accomplished what he wanted to accomplish. And Michael, so tell everybody the setup here. You're with, you know, what was the setup? You were moving some of Bob's art across country.
Yeah, right. Laughing at the Sun, though, is this midlife crisis road trip memoir where Bob and I traveled across the country in this big yellow rental truck filled with his art. We had to transport his art from Chicago to Palm Springs. So we're stuck for 4 days in this rolling confessional where we end up talking about all the changes in our lives. And for me, it was about my upteenth failed relationship. And for him, Bob had just come out as gay after a 20-year marriage and 3 kids. So I know how much you love film, so I wanted to put it in cinematic terms.
Yeah.
You think about Sideways meets My Dinner with Andre. I think that's a pretty good summation.
And it is. That's a good description. It's an apt description of the book. I mean, it really is. That's just such a fascinating idea in and of itself. How can 4 days – And I want to get into some specifics here. I mean, right out of the gate, as soon as you're planning the trip, you go to meticulous detail about the songs that you plan to play. You're making mixtapes for this trip, because what is a road trip without great music? And you've got all this music, and you've got set lists, and you put it all together, and you're all ready to go, and you're getting ready. You perfectly packed. You got everything you need. You're so excited to get on the road and get that music going. And you get in, and he rented a truck that didn't have a cassette player.
No, he didn't. So, yeah, and we had to rely on regular radio,
right? But that's
across country.
That's your first step out of the gate.
Right.
And you're like, oh God, this is going to be a nightmare.
Right. well, let me back up a minute too, because to set the tone for this too, you know, it was 1997, and I was at this crossroads where I had achieved like 3 milestones. I had just turned 40. I had 15 years at my job, and I was 6 years into this one relationship. And instead of feeling like I had all these accomplishments, I felt really lost and unhappy. And actually, my relationship was breaking up at that point. She had asked me to move out, and so I was really like in a bad place. And I thought, you know, here's an opportunity to, you know, to get away from town and to really sort things out. And what's interesting is, Bob, even though he's an artist, you'd think that he has an art background, but he doesn't. His degree is actually in psychology. So it was really interesting to have somebody who I could just kind of, you know, talk. You know, I'm extroverted by nature, so you know, I just talk ad nauseum at times.
Yeah.
And Bob was great for feedback and helped me sort through all these, you know, the situation I was going through. And then he had also just, like I said, had just come out as gay, and that was really a foreign concept to me. I had no idea. You know, I'd known him all this time, and I thought that I had known him really well, and apparently I didn't. And so that was a really good time for us to talk about that transition in his life. So, the whole My Dinner with Andre concept, too, is not only that. We talked about what film. We talked about all kinds of, you know, bizarre sexual antics and everything. Everything from an Annie Sprinkle story. I think when we get to Vegas, we start talking about a surgical hermaphrodite that we saw in this one performance or show that we went to, you know, kind of offbeat, bizarre.
It's funny that you mentioned. It's funny that you mentioned the Annie Sprinkle show, because I saw that here in town. And
Right. So you can relate.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my god, I totally forgot about that I had seen that, but I did. So you guys were moving his art out there, and he was going to see his partner at the time, after his divorce, and after he came out, and after his divorce, he started seeing a man named Edward.
Edward, yes.
Yeah. And then he was going to go, you were heading basically to his house.
Right. And what was interesting is his relationship with Edward, as he was describing it, you know, I could really see that was something I wanted in my life. You know, the relationships that I had weren't as connected, and I don't think I was ever a really good partner. I was very much, you know, the Peter Pan syndrome kind of a guy, and, you know, I was emotionally unavailable a lot of times with the relationships I was in. And that's when I figured it out, and I said, you know, I'm 40 years old, and if I don't change and become a better man, a better person, you know, I'm going to get old, and there's going to be no one there to help, you know. Dab the dribble from my mouth, kind of a thing, you know. And actually, a friend of mine had said, Michael, you know, a leopard never changes his spots. And I remember getting depressed when I heard that, because I thought, no, I can change. I can make this work. And that's what the book's really about, though. It's all these lessons learned that, and that's why I wrote it. I think that a lot of men can who are going through similar things in their lives can learn from my mistakes, you know, and learn how to become a better partner and a better person.
The other thing about it is that there's sort of a jarring bit of honesty that comes from the both of you, and I think that speaks to volumes as to how great a relationship the two of you had and still have, is that you can talk to each other the way that you talk to each other in this book, because some of it is just like sort of shockingly honest and blunt.
Sure. Oh yeah. Well, that's we both. You know, Bob's very unfiltered.
Yeah.
To know him.
Yeah.
Very unfiltered. And I'm, it's funny, after I wrote the book and I had my wife read it, you know, her first reaction was, well, I've heard all these stories before. You know, I'm an open book as well, and I've told these stories to many different people. But what's funny, Nick, is after I wrote it too, I have to admit, I also had this sort of experience where it was like, oh no, you know, this is out in the open now, it's being published, you know, there's people who are going to know my deep darkest secrets,
right?
And but then it's like, well, but that's the story, you know. And I think I feel pretty comfortable with sharing that.
Well, it's a really good story, and I think a lot of people can identify with it. A lot of people can. And I, you know, as a 50-year-old man who has had a history of bad relationships, and as I was reading it, there were a lot of truths that are totally identifiable. Before we let you go, I wanted to say, Bob is still, as you mentioned, he's in Oakland right now. His partner did pass away. A few years back, but you did get a chance to spend time with him, and it's really towards the end of the book is when you finally arrive at their place, and it's a really lovely chapter, a really lovely couple of chapters.
And I think, you know, my favorite thing is the epilogue, too, where it kind of pulls a lot of things together, and that's where there's redemption and there's transformation. I mean, the whole trip is sort of like a hero's journey for those of you who are into Joseph Campbell and the power of myth and Star Wars.
It was our
journey for us to kind of sort these things out and to have, you know, revelation and transformation and eventually redemption. So, and I think that all came through.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful book. Very, very quickly, tell the story why it's called Laughing at the Sun. It goes back to your childhood.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away.
Oh, okay. Well, then don't do it.
Because I want people to discover that on their own. But
okay.
I will say this much, though, that it is about enjoying the moment. And I always loved Helen Keller's quote, you know, keep your face to the sun and you'll never see the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of alludes to a time in your life, you know, when the story I relate in the book is, you know, I was young, and you don't have any fears for the future. You
right.
don't have any regrets about the past. You're just in the moment, and you're enjoying it. And that's,
right.
and that's a really good thing to connect with,
right.
you know?
Okay. Well, it's a really terrific book. It's called Laughing at the Sun, The Story of a Man Who Changes Spots. Michael Neiman is the author. It's N-E-J-M-A-N. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on the book, Michael.
Thanks so much, Nick, and I really appreciate your support.
Absolutely. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye. There you go. Michael Neiman, author of Laughing at the Sun, a really terrific road trip book about two guys who drive across the cross country and both have epiphanies. Nice stuff. All right, we'll take a quick break here. It's Nick DiGiulio on 720 WGN.